Welcome to the next episode of Cauliflower Communiques. My name's Alex Saunders, and our company, IOTM, is the creator of the Cauliflower Conferencing Service and the sponsor of the Cauliflower Communiques series, which is a three-month-long interview and seminar series with guests ranging from Alan Alda to Ken Blanchard, William Shatner, and, of course, tonight's guest, Ariane de Bonvoisin. Our host tonight is Alan Hunken, and before we start, I'd like to tell you a little bit about Alan. He's been a professional speaker, writer, and broadcaster in the personal and social empowerment fields for more than 30 years. A broadcaster and radio talk show host since 1997, Alan has conducted more than 700 interviews with authors and thought leaders from around the world. And he's also interviewed a who's who of entertainers, academics, sports, and political leaders. Tens of thousands of people listen each month, and over 3.5 million have downloaded one or more of Alan's interviews from the web. So with that small introduction, I'm going to turn the microphone over. Welcome, Alan and Ariane, and the mic is yours.
Oh, thank you, Alec, and thank you so much for the work that you've been doing in making the Cauliflower Communiques successful. Welcome, everyone, to the Cauliflower Communiques. I'm Alan Hunken, your host, and for the next hour and a half, we're going to talk about change. You're going to find out that you are, in fact, a change expert, but you perhaps lack some information, lack some skill and knowledge around change. You know, you've been changing since the moment you were conceived, really, but you have not necessarily received some good information, some good training on change, how to change and how to change for the better. Our guest tonight, I am so pleased to be with her again. This is my second time interviewing Ariane de Bonvoisin. Isn't that amazing?
You can do it. You can do it.
I can do it. I do Bonvoisin.
No, you got it.
I got it. I practiced that for 15 minutes this afternoon and then choked on it. Isn't that amazing? Good job. Thank God for editing, and now you guys know why I don't do live radio very often. Ariane was born in 1972. She's an author, entrepreneur, expert on change. She's the founder of The First 30 Days Incorporated, which is the operator of 30days.com, a website for helping people to change their lives. Her book, The First 30 Days, Your Guide to Any Change and Loving Your Life More, was published in 2008. She has had an amazing career we're going to talk about as we go along. Ariane, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be on the show.
It's a pleasure to have you.
I always look forward to talking to you because you have interesting and different types of questions, so I really acknowledge you for that.
Thank you so much. Where did you get the inkling, the beginnings of the idea for the book and the subsequent website, first30days.com?
Great, great first question. The inklings of the idea, I think, were being born inside of me really from the earliest of ages. I grew up in six countries. I was subject to a lot of change, whether it's changes in the environment that I was living in, religion, culture, what I was eating, health that I was being exposed to. So change was very much part of what I grew up with. What started to happen was as I went through sort of several jobs and several relationships and several other places where I was living, I was realizing that change was probably the most important life skill to get good at, and that we're really never taught how to change and how to get good at change, and that everyone that I was meeting and that any of you are meeting on a daily basis really fit in one of three categories. They're either struggling with a change, they're either secretly really wanting to make a change, or they're helping someone else through a change. And I thought, well, isn't it interesting that change is the number one guaranteed thing in life, the one constant, as JFK says, and yet we all find it hard, we all struggle with it. We feel alone when we're going through change and we're overwhelmed by it. And so a lot of meetings, a lot of sort of informal interviews with people started the idea that maybe there was a way to truly make change easier. And through these interviews with thousands of people, I went looking for what are the principles that make someone good at change. Why is it that some people we know are great at change, initiate it, get through some of the toughest changes, and others are really stressed and resist it and cannot initiate a change they really know that they would like to make? So the first 30 days is really a metaphor to help you get started with change, help you think about change, help you think about that change you've always wanted to make, and to surround you with the right inspiration, the right information, the right tips, the right mistakes to avoid. What are the experts that you can trust? And that's really what I wanted to bring to people, both through the book and through the website, first30days.com.
Yeah, and trust is a really key word, too, because, and we're going to talk about that a little bit as we work our way through the book, but, you know, there's so many people that kind of want us to change, like advertisers want us to change. The tribe, you call them, our family, our friends, our culture, they want us to change. Lots of change that has come at us, Ariane, has had an agenda attached to it, right? Whereas, and what was great, is great about your book, is that it's really a book written for people, to change themselves. There's really no agenda other than to learn how to change better themselves.
That's right. And, you know, one of the things that I say is, you know, families don't change. Countries don't change. Companies don't change. People change. And within each of those structures that we belong to, the changes that we really want start with ourselves. And they start with looking at, well, where am I at on the change scale? What is it that I personally need to do or look at or contribute? But in a way that resonates for you and your intuition. No one's telling you to do it. And there's one of the things that I so encourage and invite people to do is to turn your own inner microphone on. Because if you don't, all the noise that's coming at you from the outside world, from society, from what's thrown at you, what's expected, is so loud. And that's why people find themselves in the wrong jobs, in the wrong relationships, in the wrong cities, with too much debt, with too much weight on them. It's because they've drowned out their own inner voice and their own inner way of deciding what's right for them in their life, and consequently, then what to change.
I think that your resume really tells us a lot about you in relation to change. You know, you graduated from the London School of Economics at the age of 19, joined the Boston Consulting Group. You worked in more than a dozen companies, earned an MBA from Stanford University, moved to New York, worked for BMG, Sony, other media giants. 2000, you worked for Time Warner in a company that was a $500 million digital media venture fund, and you were keyed in as the managing director of that, left the corporate world, worked in Africa, a certified trainer for the Tony Robbins company. Tony, and I know Tony keeps you on your toes, changing all the time, for sure. And that's just kind of the ones that you listed on your resume, but you have... Really, change has been just an absolute part of not only your upbringing, which you mentioned before, but your career as well.
It certainly has. And a lot of people ask me, well, why so many changes? What was driving you? What was initiating those changes? And, you know, I would answer that in two ways. One was I kept on sort of checking in with my intuition. Was this the right place for me? Was it the right job? Was it the right environment, the right people? And so many of us struggle in an environment that we know isn't quite right. And when that sort of alarm would go off, I would actively look for the next opportunity. And very often, I know when I left Time Warner and I was in a very senior position, very young, running a $500 million fund, really not knowing what I was doing. And I started getting a feeling that I had climbed up a very high ladder. And it was one of two things. It was either the wrong ladder or it was leaning up against the wrong wall. And so began the journey of getting off that ladder, even though I'd taken a lot of time and image and ego and reputation and all of what we attach, and had to come down the ladder and really start with not knowing what was going to come next. And I resigned from that job. And I took what I thought was going to be a few months off to figure out what was my passion, what was truly my calling, how I wanted to contribute, make a difference, which was the other thing that kept sort of letting me know that I wasn't quite in the right jobs. That was always an element that was missing for me. Like, my work didn't really feel as if it mattered or if it touched people or inspired people. And I ended up taking 2.5 years off. And, you know, off being sort of in inverted commas, because within that, I did work in Africa for a year, got my soul back. I journeyed to Italy and I climbed Kilimanjaro. And that's when I started becoming more and more aware of how much change was all around us all the time. So it was really laying the foundation for what it is that I'm creating today. But the professional changes are some of the hardest that we make, and yet they are also the ones that bring us the most joy when we actually go ahead and make them.
I want to work our way through the book, because you have put together a key 9 principles of change. And this is where, as I was going through your book, I realized that, you know, as I said before, change has been a part of my life, and I've had some pretty rugged ones along the way. But how little I actually knew about what change was all about. I had cancer in 1991, something I don't recommend to anybody. The counselor, when I was in between the operation and radiation treatments, they assigned me a counselor at the cancer clinic. And the gal was really smart and really wise and really kind and gentle. And she said, "Alan, cancer is an unnegotiable opportunity to change." And I said, "Oh, really?" I said, "What do I need to change then?" And she says, "I have no idea. But your life is never going to be the same again. And you can either take this and turn it into a gift, or you can make it your worst nightmare, and it's really up to you. But it's unnegotiable that you are going to change." Let's talk about the first of the 9 principles, which is change your view of change, which is really what you was telling me to do, wasn't it?
It was, absolutely. From these thousands of interviews that I did, the thing that was the very foundation of how people changed, if people changed, and when people changed, were the beliefs that they had. And those beliefs were really around 3 different things. They're the beliefs that you have about yourself, the beliefs that you have about life and also change, and the beliefs that you have about this specific change, whether in your case it was cancer, or for someone else it might be a job loss or quitting smoking. And the most important belief that makes someone good at change is a belief of optimism. It is, how do you become a change optimist? How do you look for what is possible? What was the positive in your experience of getting cancer? As I'm sure, Alan, you'll be able to share on this call, because there is always something positive and good that comes from any change. So to look at those 3 areas, the beliefs you have about yourself, most of us have a very negative belief of, I'm bad at change, or I hate change. And those 2 keep us very stuck, and they do not allow us to sort of move in the direction with life, because change is life. So if you want to make a change in your life, what you say to yourself about yourself and you look at yourself in the mirror is a dramatic shift already in terms of what you say will make a difference in who you attract, the kind of job that you go for, the kind of money that you have. But that starts with your beliefs about yourself. The beliefs around life. People who are good at change believe that life is on their side. They're not people who say that life is against them, they're unlucky, God's forgotten them, bad things happen to them. You know, it was Einstein who said the most important decision and question that you will ever ask yourself is whether to believe you live in a friendly universe or an unfriendly one. And that's really the difference between a change optimist versus someone who will actually get through change. And then the final one is really, well, what do you believe about this change? So for people listening, you know, if someone's just lost a job, what do you believe that losing a job means? And actually getting it out of your head and realizing that all that is are beliefs, and it's very different from facts and reality. And knowing that a lot of the beliefs that we hold for things that are so important in our lives are actually not our beliefs. They're what I call the beliefs of the tribe. And the beliefs of the tribe are what your family has told you to believe about marriage, about your sexuality, about what kind of job you should be in or you should be staying in. Those are very, they hold us down very often because they're often not ours. They are external to us. And it's really having the courage to examine, and I go through this in the book, is really taking people through an exercise of identifying what beliefs are worth holding on to and what are worth revisiting because they actually don't serve you. And so many of our beliefs are in our blind spot. They're actually just unconsciously driving every decision, every action, every person we want to be with or not, everything we do initiate or not. So it's really sort of this unwritten language that's running through our lives.
Well, Byron Katie is one of the best at that, I think, in that, what is she got? Four simple questions. I think I can remember two of them are, the first one is that true? The person will make a statement about themselves or about the situation or whatever. And she'll say, is that true? And then she says, how do you know that's true? And then we start to dig into our beliefs, right? That's where we start. Well, that's where the rubber meets the road.
Right. And I love Byron Katie. The book is called The Work. You know, and the other two questions, if I remember them well, are, well, who would you be without this belief? Which is such a freeing question. And the final question is, well, turn that belief around. For example, if people say divorce is a bad thing, using her analogy, she would say, well, what about if divorce was a gift? What about if losing your job was a gift? What about if having cancer was the most beautiful wake-up call for reevaluating your life, your relationships? So she's certainly one of my teachers, and I've loved her work.
Number two, the change guarantee. I just love this one.
I love it too. It has gotten me through some very tough times, also personally in my life. So the change guarantee states that from this change, from this situation, something good will come. And I have it written down in a few key places in my life, whether it's in my office, whether it's at home, anywhere that you might encounter a change that life throws at you that might sort of set you off course, big or small. And it's there as a reminder that no matter what, there is something good that will come from it. And it, as I said, having interviewed a lot of people and having seen over 1 million people now on our website, people can always identify what good came from this change. You know, it was Lao Tzu says that hidden in any misfortune is good fortune. And we've got to literally train our minds to go look for, well, how could this be a good thing? And it starts with asking a different question. Something happens. How could this be a gift? If I had to learn something from it and put it to good use, what could it be? You know, one of the exercises I get people to do to really sort of feel into the change guarantee as opposed to maybe go, well, there's nothing good about this specific change, is to think back on all the hard changes that you've been through, because we have all had some, and to sort of write them down. What, maybe you didn't get into the college of your choice. Maybe your first love broke up with you. Maybe your parents got divorced. Maybe a deal didn't happen. Maybe you didn't get the job that you thought was your dream job. And then to really identify honestly, how was that a good thing? And is it possible that life actually at the time knew better? And now that you can look back with perspective, that something good did come from that. So when you look back and you realize that that in fact was happening all along, it just didn't feel like it in the moment, you can look at it today and a change that you might be facing and just know without a shadow of a doubt that life is working with you and something good will come. And the last point I'd probably make on that point, Alan, is people who are good at change have much more of a abundant framework than one of scarcity. And that really goes with there are more jobs out there. There are more women out there, more men out there. There's more money out there. There's more health out there. That we really live in an abundant world. And when we're going through change, people who struggle and are bad at change have a real view of scarcity, have a real view of limitation. And to sort of really open up, you know, the positive aspect, the abundant aspect, that was very present in all the interviews that I did with people. And I asked people who've gone through some of the most horrific changes you can imagine, what good came from this? And they, not a single person ever said, you know, nothing good came from it. There was always some glimmer of something positive.
Well, it's I suppose it depends upon degree too, doesn't it? I mean, you get some kind of level of change that comes at us, and we can say, oh, yeah, something is going to come at us as a result of this. But then something hits us really hard, which really tests that concept, doesn't it?
It does. And, you know, one of the things I say is that change is not a logical equation. So sometimes maybe something might hit you in your personal life, and then you have huge fortune that happens in your professional life. So it's not one equals the other. I think it's also giving life enough time. You know, we're so impatient with life when we are going through a change that we never really look back on where we were and go, oh my God, I understand. That makes sense. We're all speeding ahead, that we rarely look back and actually sort of hold ourselves, hold our change, acknowledge how much we've already been through. I know we're gonna talk about that a little bit later.
The change muscle, which is what I was talking about at the top of the hour, which was and is that we are designed for change. We have a change muscle within us.
We do, and we are changing. Our bodies are changing every second of every day. And yet there's a part of us that still is convinced that we're bad at change. And yet we're in a living, breathing organism that can only survive and keep going if it changes. You know, the change muscle, the principle behind that is that you are much stronger, much smarter, much more resilient, much more intuitive than you've ever been told. And your biggest need really right now is to remember that inner strength. Remember that the core of who you are comes from all the experiences that you've been through. And the core of your spirit comes from all those new experiences. You have that change muscle, and that change muscle has a memory of all the changes that you've been through. Whether it's you've graduated, whether you've gotten out of debt, whether you quit smoking, whether you've bought an apartment, whether you, whatever it is, started a job, started a business, whether you might have lost a loved one or witnessed a divorce. We are a living, breathing change resume, as I call it, as we're all so attached to having a professional resume because we think that's going to define us. But what really defines us is our change resume and what we've seen, what we've witnessed, what we've done with it. What are the resources that we go to and use to get through change? For all of us, it's quite unique. Some of us might go to prayer. Some of us might go to food. Some of us might go to friends and a support team. Some of us might go to journaling. Some of us might go to just drowning out sort of the thoughts. So really, you know, getting people to think about, wow, well, what's my change resume? What are the changes that I've actually been through in my life? Have I gotten pregnant? Have I had kids? Have I had to deal with a health diagnosis? What's on my change resume? And acknowledging yourself already now for all of these changes that you've been through, you've just never identified them as a change. And when you realize that, the next time a change will come around, you'll remember again that you did get through that loss. You did get through being fired. You did get through whatever change, you know, it was for you. And your change muscle has a stacking effect. So with every little change you make, with every big change that you might be facing, that muscle gets stronger and stronger and stronger.
Yes, and in this section, you talk about how strong is your change muscle, which is a question which has a number of things attached to it. We do have the change muscle, but it doesn't necessarily mean that we've been exercising that muscle, and it does take energy to change and to. You know, it takes energy to be positive. I've been talking in my seminars for years about this, that if you don't have the energy to be positive, you also have to look at things like, what are you eating? What are you doing in your life to be healthy physically and mentally? Because it's really a signal that maybe there's other things that you need to change. I just recently quit drinking coffee, and I got to tell you, That's been as challenging as anything I've ever done in my life.
It's a huge change.
But it's like I was realizing that there were things in my life I wanted to change, but the coffee was actually getting in the way.
So what made you change, Alan?
I have type 2 diabetes. And so what happens is with coffee is that it affects that in that it affects the ability of my cells to generate energy. So I decided, well, if I want the energy, if I want to be able to be vibrant in life, you know, I've got to get rid of some of these things that I've been doing and not eating very well and drinking coffee and spending just a little bit too much time down at the local tavern here, yucking it up with the boys. Between all of those things, I really just didn't have that vibrancy that I wanted. So I decided I wanted the vibrancy more than I wanted those other things, and so that's been the motivation.
And you talk right into one of my favorite points to bring up, which is that people who are good at change, they do honor their body. They do take care of their health because they realize that change involves a lot of emotional energy, a lot of psychic energy, and a tremendous amount of mental energy because we're all thinking and overthinking everything. And the only way for that to move out and through us is through our bodies. Otherwise, when we overthink things so much, that's when change becomes stuck and stagnant and we feel paralyzed. And so for us to get more into our bodies, to drink more water, to exercise more, and as basic as it is, people who do take care of their health by far have a huge advantage over others in actually how they go through change. And it is linked to your change muscle. There are things that your body will be craving to help you get through that change. And some of them are external and some of them are internal. You know, we've talked a lot about all these external changes, and sometimes the smaller internal changes are at least as powerful. So as an example, an internal change is how you view yourself. An internal change is what you say to yourself. An internal change is deciding to be honest, deciding to be authentic, deciding to be grateful, deciding to forgive someone. Those are huge changes, and they are internal changes more than external.
Yeah, these are places where all that energy escapes, isn't it? And you talk about that in the next section, the next principle, the change demons, because certainly there are these places that we have that are really working sometimes as hard or harder sometimes at having us not change as having us change.
Okay, absolutely right. And the change demons, as I affectionately called them, were the emotions that kept on coming up from people that would either hold them in a stuck place and sort of always accompanied many, many changes. The first one was fear, not surprisingly, and understanding how some people are very paralyzed by fear, while some people can act despite it, can identify it, can get familiar with it. It's not that it ever goes away necessarily. Or they can look at whether that fear is actually their own or maybe the parents' fear or someone else's fear. The idea with the change demons is to know a few things. One is that they are temporary. They're not a permanent state. Secondly is to give yourself permission to feel them. And I'm going to mention all six of them. But really, I think what we all need most is to be given permission to be human. And that is to feel all of it and not to feel as if it's not okay or it's not allowed. So if you feel fear, you feel it fully. Many times it's not acknowledging the fear that creates so much havoc in our lives, or not acknowledging the guilt that creates so much havoc in our lives, but really sort of fully feeling them and really reaching for the antidote to some of them. So the antidote to fear is faith, and that can be faith in yourself. It can be faith in someone else's view of yourself if you don't have that for you. It can be faith in life or faith in a higher power. The next change demon that kept on coming up for people was doubt. Classic, we doubt that this change is we're going to succeed. We doubt that things are going to get better, or we're going to be happy again, or something good will come from this. And really learning to surrender to something greater, surrendering to good things showing up for us, and being comfortable with the uncertainty. That's something that we're never taught at all. We're always taught certainty and structure. And for any parents listening, it's such a gift to teach your children about change. And so often what we do as parents is we do not teach them about uncertainty. We make sure that everything is structured and they have the same food and the same clothes and they go to the same school and the same church and the same shops. And then we're surprised how we're not sort of fully ready to deal with life, which is really all about change.
Doubt is something, Ariane, that is so subtle, isn't it? Like, it can be a parent or a spouse. It could be just a look or a hesitancy in their voice around something that you've presented. Let's say an idea. I've always said that ideas are fragile, and so keep them to yourself until they've developed enough energy to grow inside you so that they're strong enough. Because the first thing we do, of course, is we go out and we say to some of the people that we trust and love, we say, well, what do you think of this idea? And, it won't be the first one. Maybe it'll be the second one, the third one, but it'll be somebody who'll say, well, I don't know. We tried that back in 67 and didn't work very well, but, who knows? And next thing you know, you're now, if that doubt seeps in, then change is going to be difficult.
You're absolutely right. And we're going to talk about that in terms of who you trust and who you share your change with and who really believes you can change and who wants you to change. All very, very important questions. The next demon that kept on coming up for people was blame. We do a lot of blaming. We blame our ex-lover. We blame our parents. So many of us blame our parents still today. We blame our employees. We blame our workers. We blame the country. We blame. There's so much blame energy. And one of the things that I challenge myself to do is to spend 24-hour periods of just not blaming anything or anyone, not the traffic, not the weather, not a person, not anyone. And there is no blame energy. Blame never achieves anything. Never. Blame has never achieved anything. And if anything, it keeps you stuck from moving through that change. And so the antidote is really honesty about how futile it is to blame. We blame God. We blame everyone. And just the honesty about, well, what's my share in this? How can I reverse or change the situation as opposed to just getting stuck behind a wall of blame? The next one is impatience. That one's classic. We don't like change. We want it to move much quicker. We're not willing to be okay with the questions. We need to know the certainty right now. So many of us, myself included, we tend to overestimate how much change can happen in a month. And then we so underestimate how dramatically different our lives can be in 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. But it's sort of that first month, one of the reasons why I called it the first 30 days, is just giving yourself a longer time frame, giving yourself permission where it's probably not going to take the time that you think it's going to take. And the antidote, in line with that is endurance and knowing that you are going to need to hold this line and have the energy to keep going for a little bit while longer, and you will, very comfortably sail into the answers of some things that you've been struggling with today. The next one was guilt. We have a lot of guilt running through us. It definitely holds us back, especially during change. Maybe we are guilty about changing careers. We're guilty about moving away from our parents. We're guilty about not doing the job that maybe we thought we would. And it's really sort of letting go of that guilt, replacing it with more of an energy of forgiving yourself, forgiving, someone else's opinions of what you should be doing or the standards that you've set for yourself. And then the last one was shame. We have a lot of shame around things that might have happened. We feel ashamed if we're diagnosed. We feel ashamed if we can't lose weight, if we can't quit smoking. We feel ashamed if we were fired. We feel ashamed if we had an abortion. We feel there's a lot of shame running through us. And really replacing that with a sense of honor and a sense of compassion for yourself of this is who I am. It's a combination. And it's bringing the shadow into the light, not hiding it, and knowing that, that's ultimately what makes us all connect with other human beings is when we are honest, when we are authentic, and when that stuff is brought forward. So it's just knowing that those change demons, they are going to show up. They often go hand in hand with change. Some of them might be more prevalent for you. Some people might be more stuck in the guilt or stuck in the blame, and some people maybe never get through change because that the element of time and the impatience and the clock ticking is just unbearable for them. So see which ones you most need to include.
Of course, I follow David R. Hawkins' work. Of course, his book was Power versus Force, and And the one that I studied pretty extensively was called Transcending the Levels of Human Consciousness. And
I love his work. I love it.
It's incredible. And he, of course, has put these on a scale between 0 and 1,000. And you work your way up through them as you evolve yourself as a person and then ultimately as a spiritual being. You evolve through all of these, and we all go through them. But what he talks about is that shame is the lowest of all vibrations, actually. And so shame will pull us down faster and harder than anything else. And interestingly enough, your number one is fear, I think, which is about 3 or 4 up the scale. So in other words, if you're feeling fear, you're actually making some progress.
You are. And you know what? If you're feeling anger, you're making some progress, because shame is a very internal, hidden, dark energy that is not, it's not in any way sort of expressed. And anything that is actually felt, so fear is very much felt. A lot of times people are feeling shame and they can't put a feeling on what they're feeling. So anything that brings it out, that gets you to feel those feelings, you're already so much on your way to progress.
Well, you know, I'm a good old farm boy from rural Manitoba, and we would never have admitted that we were afraid. You know, that was just, we grew up in cowboy country, and that isn't really something that cowboys talk about all that much. But today, I really notice in my body, when my body shifts and I starts to feel fear, I'm getting in tune. I think it's a function, isn't it, Ariane, of a fine-tuning to know what you actually are experiencing or what you actually are feeling.
Yep, and putting some sort of safe environment around that where it's not something to be avoided, it's not something to be run from. You know, one of the things that I truly believe, and it's work to figure this out, but if you do it, it will change your life. Figure out the emotion that you most resist feeling, because that emotion is running your life. And so if you do not want to feel embarrassed, that will run your life. If you do not want to feel fear, it will run your life. What is the emotion that is actually trapping you? And once you can sort of see, you know, is it a fear of looking bad? Is it a fear of not being good enough? Is it a fear of not being loved? Those emotions are actually running our life. Even though we think we're resisting them, they're actually seeping through everything that we say, do, and feel.
So much of the Western world is about making it happen. And we encourage our kids. Everything about our lives is about going for it and making it happen. And I think that sets up a tone of always going out and getting. And at some point in time, and this has happened to me a few times in my life where I've really understood the opposite of that, which is being willing to receive. And along with that goes acceptance, being willing to just let it be what is.
Yes, and you're leading me right into the next principle, Alan, which I love, which is the principle of acceptance. And letting go of the way life should be, letting go of the way you think life should be for your kids if you have some. Resistance really causes the pain during change. And it's resistance to both making a change they know you have to make deep down, and it's resistance to a change that might have been thrown your way, and we've all had and will have our fair share. You know, again, using Byron Katie's quote as an example, she said, you know, when you argue with reality, you lose only 100% of the time. And yet we still do it. We argue as to why that person broke up with us, why we got fired, why this, you know, this thing happened. And the quicker we can sort of get to a place of accepting it, the quicker that moment of relief comes. The metaphor that Esther and Jerry Hicks use, which I love, is, you know, really seeing your life as a river. And you are a boat in the river. And whenever a change sort of shows up, classically as human beings, we do one of two things. We either desperately start rowing back upstream. We want the relationship back. We want the health back. We want the job back. We want the person that we've lost back. and we row and we row and we try and row back upstream to have that. And that creates huge energy drain and huge effort and huge pain. Or the other thing that we do is we actually just cling to the rocks. And we cling and we cling and we cling and we absolutely do not want to sort of go in the direction that life and the river is taking us. And the truth is, at that point, the moment that you do stop with the oars, the moment that you do let go of the rocks and you do go in the direction of the river, there's such a feeling of relief. And everyone I interviewed for the book kept saying, you know, there was a moment in time I remember where I just accepted. I found my peace with it. It didn't mean that some of the emotions, you know, sort of disappeared, but I accepted. I accepted the loss. I accepted that this change had to happen. I accepted that I had to stop drinking coffee for my health. And so really looking at, well, what is it that I need to accept? And it might not be something huge for you right now, but it might be accepting something that might have been said or done to you in the past, that you still have a lot of energy of resistance towards it. And it doesn't make it right or wrong to accept it. It doesn't condone it. It doesn't make the other person right. It just actually gives you the freedom to let go of the way you think something should have been. There's a real difference between looking at, well, what is reality versus what is the illusion that my mind is feeding me? You know, accept the reality and do not accept the illusion of what it is that your thinking mind is trying to tell you is the truth.
I interviewed one of the world's most famous dancers, and I said, How do you jump like that? How do you fly through the air like that? You know, so high, so far. And she said, the way it really ends up, what, you know, you start out by pushing yourself to jump farther and faster and all of that kind of thing. But she says, ultimately, nothing really changes until you accept your relationship with gravity. And that was a major change in my mind that at some point in time, she was no longer resisting gravity. And in not resisting gravity, they had a relationship.
I love it. Makes me think of when you stop resisting life, and life equals change. And when you stop resisting, that change will come and it will happen. You will have a very different relationship with it.
One of my main mentors, somebody that I've been following for a number of years, said in a seminar, in a workshop one time, many, many years ago, all problems, all resistance is a fight with God. Now, I was a person that reacted to the word God, so I immediately reacted to that idea. And it's been amazing in that only in the last 6 months have I got in touch with kind of the argument I'm having with the universe. And this gets right into the law of attraction, and because I've been working a lot with the law of attraction, and this idea that I'm literally having a fight with the universe and the way it works, and because so this acceptance, Ariane, is, you know, can move right out into the spiritual realms.
It is, and you know, I'm listening to you because my primary meditation and my primary principle that I find myself working over and over again in my own book is acceptance, and accepting things in my life that have happened, and also accepting things in my life that have not happened, might not happen, or maybe just have not happened yet, and to find a real sense of peace with that, and to just know that there's something bigger going on, and maybe life knows better, and I might not be able to see all the pieces of the puzzle right now, and yet when I accept them, my days go infinitely smoother.
Principle number 6, the things that you can control. And there are a number of things that, I mean, we are never, ever ultimately a victim. There are aspects of all of this that we can have a profound effect on.
Yes. So there are things you can control. Like, you know, when we're going through change, everything feels so out of control, and we are just grappling and gripping to anything that feels safe and feels certain. And there are really three questions I found from interviewing people that they felt that they found some sense of control. The first was the words, the questions, the stories, the language that they used while they were going through change. So here's an example. Someone who has recently lost a job who might say, this is the worst day of my life. This is a disaster. This will never, you know, change. It's the most awful thing that ever could have happened. The energy of those words is just incredibly toxic. And describing any sort of change with that level of intense words and emotions has a dramatic difference on not only how you feel it, how you will then deal with it, but also how you explain it to the outside world and how people then react to you. So really be aware of, well, what are my go-to really destructive negative words? What are words that I casually throw around? I've had a disastrous day. It's been the worst day. People throw that around, not realizing the impact of the energy that some of those words have. Just be a lot pickier with the words. And use words like, you know what, it's been challenging, or I'm really being stretched right now, or I'm uncomfortable, I'm out of my comfort zone, or I'm not quite sure how this is going to work out. You immediately have a sense of, again, relief and peace, where you start accessing a place that does have some answers, as opposed to just creating this wall of separation from some negative language. Same thing with the questions. This was unbelievably important. Really getting into, well, what are questions that people ask themselves, both internal dialogue and external, of what I call a change optimist? You know, in the book, there's really the top 10 questions that a person who's good at change asks. You know, one of them we touched on is, well, what could be good about this change? Another one is, what can I learn from this change? Another one is, well, what hasn't changed that I can actually focus on and be grateful for? Or how can I use this change? Or what is something small that I can actually do? How can I find humor in what has happened? So there's a whole host of go-to questions when you start training your mind to go there, as opposed to, why did this happen to me? The why. You know, how could God have let this happen? Why am I so unlucky? Those are two very different types of people and very different types of profile of how they will navigate through change. And the other one with language, it's really the stories that you tell yourself and the stories that you tell other people. So we all have a story. We have a story about our parents. We have a story about ourselves. We have a story about our weight. We have a story about our financial situation. We have a story about why we're single. Why are we divorced? Why we're unhealthy. We've got to let go of the stories. Those stories are keeping us trapped. They are not creating new space for something else to come in. And those stories are boring your friends. You have been telling the same story for years. And the only reason I know this is I used to tell quite a few of them myself. And I've had a few friends go, you know what, Ariane, we're really bored by that story. We're kind of done with it. And you know what? I've just never said it since. I was like, oh my God, I'm horrified. I've probably said this story 150 times. So just start, put some antenna on your head and go, wow, I've told that story over and over and over. And you've embellished it. And it keeps you stuck. You know, if you really truly believe that story to be true, you will keep living that story about why something's happened, why your wife's a certain way, why you're single, why, you know, you can't lose the weight. You've got to drop the story. That is definitely something you can control easily. You know, the next area are your thoughts, your expectations, expectations for life, expectations for other people, expectations for where you should be are like a virus. They really are. You know, when you let go of the expectations of how this change is meant to be, why it happened, and just sort of go, I'm going to choose not to know how this is going to happen. I'm going to, whenever I have somewhat of a destructive, negative, disempowering thought, all I'm going to say is you're going to try and reach for a slightly better thought. You don't need to dramatically change it, but you need to be aware of what is your brain feeding you. Have a little bit of a detached way of listening and going, wow, my brain is really getting me to, you know, look at some very toxic stuff right now. And just have sort of a third party observation view on it. If someone was hanging out in your head, what is it that you say over and over and over? And a lot of this, Alan, it's what you said at the beginning of the show, is it's sort of bringing it out of your blind spot and just giving yourself your instruction manual as to what are you doing that's great already today that you have been able to deal with so many changes in your life, and what is it along the lines of these principles that you actually are getting stuck at, and what you're thinking can really either free you or trap you. And then the last thing you really can control is how much do you actually allow yourself to feel? You know, I interviewed someone for the book, and I said, why is it that we're all so unhappy? I mean, kids are happy and then something happens. And he says, oh, that's really easy. We're all so unhappy. I can answer that in one word. And that word is thinking. Thinking makes us unhappy. If you're feeling, you're a lot more likely to access feelings that are good and ultimately make you feel better. But if you are stuck in the world of thinking and you're not in the present moment, and those two things often go together, that is where a lot of the pain shows up. So one of the things you can control is really letting yourself, if it's a tough change, just grieve that change. You know, whatever it is, even the good changes are really hard. I've interviewed people who got married, got pregnant, finally got their dream job, started that business, made the money, and somehow they're not feeling, ecstasy and joy and happiness. So every change, even the good ones, involves some sense of loss. And just knowing that ahead of time, why am I not feeling so good? This is crazy. I'm having a great day, great life. I'm in love. This is what's going on. Just knowing that there's usually some sort of sense of loss attached to it. But people who are good at change, they're in touch with their feelings. They know how to grieve through their losses, and they know how to sort of be fully expressed in that.
Number 7, meet your spiritual side. The Celestine Prophecy introduced the idea of view your life in terms of 1,000 years. Now, that wasn't a new idea. That native spirituality has been putting forward that idea for many, many thousands of years, to view your life in terms of 1,000 years. And I think that a couple of things happen there. We get to move to the observer quickly. And secondly, we don't get too upset about each little thing that's happening right now in the moment. But all of this, if there is a spiritual dimension, as you say in the book, that spiritual dimension is wanting you to be happy and to be, at least it wants neutrality. If at the very least it wants you to, that you to not be in pain, not be suffering, not be whatever. If you believe that it's an abundant universe, then the universe wants you to be happy and to be abundant. Change is an opportunity to access that spiritual dimension of ourselves, Ariane.
It certainly is. And I truly believe that some of the changes that happen to us in our lives are a huge invitation to reconnect with our true essence and who we are, and that we're not just physical beings, that there is more of a magical, spiritual, other dimension to us. And some of those times change is that real wake-up call where it's an invitation to go inside. It's an invitation to find a place inside of ourselves that does not change when everything around us is changing. And we all have that place, and we've all connected with it at least once in our life. And it's a place that is calm, and it's grounded, and it's guided, and it knows what to do, and it has the answers. And so many of us don't want to go there. So many of us don't want to go into that quiet space. We don't want to hear that inner voice. We don't want to hear what it is that we need to change in our lives, because very often it involves work. And so it feels easier for us to turn that inner microphone off, go ahead and keep going in your day, as opposed to fully letting that inner microphone sort of guide you and direct you. Wherever it is that you feel that wisdom's coming from, if you feel it's coming from, a religious entity or something bigger or just sort of your higher self, it's really not, it's very open in terms of where that wisdom is. But we all have intuition. We all have a gift of instinct. We all have, an ability to tune in our antenna to what that is. And yet so many of us diminish it. We look outside for answers. We turn to other people. We never really reconnect with something bigger that's going on, that's always on, and it's always available. And it's not being scared of taking that time for ourselves. Why are we so scared? Why are we so scared? What is it that we're going to hear? We might hear the truth, and then that truth might involve some sort of a change in work. But ultimately, life is constantly trying to put you in the right direction. It's constantly trying to, you know, get your attention and give you those answers. I know for me personally, all the challenging decisions that I've made in my life, you know, that didn't work out, I've always gone against my intuition, and I've always known. You know, I've always known, and there's always a sense of I knew I hired the wrong person, or I knew I got into a relationship with the wrong person, or I knew I shouldn't have, you know, bought that piece of property, or whatever it is. But so it's really reconnecting to a bigger dimension, another reason as to why is it that, you know, this situation with your cancer happened? Why is it that someone might have changed careers? Why is it? And just asking yourself a different type of question and allowing that answer to come from inside first and foremost. But it's one of those principles for me where no matter who I was talking to, and all the way through all the research that I did of, you know, political figures, religious figures, some of the most beautiful souls that have come across our planet in the last sort of few hundred years, they all believed in something greater. They didn't all necessarily believe in the same thing, but they all believed in something greater.
You've been to the top of Mount Kilimanjaro. You've been to the bottom of the earth, Antarctica. You've been throughout Africa. I suppose there were times there where there was change and there was also that spiritual connection. Tell us about any of those, and also, but maybe in the silence, in the quiet of your own apartment as well, where you had, maybe you don't have to go to the top of Mount Kilimanjaro to experience that.
You're absolutely right. I think, you know, your spiritual side is something that you can take with you anywhere that you are. One of the metaphors that for me has been most important into how I view my life, and when my life really started to change, I always thought I had sort of a spiritual path. I always thought that I consider myself a spiritual person. You know, right from when I was about 16 years old, when certain things started happening in my life, and I just sort of decided that was a place that I could find some peace and some answers. And what I really had was, you know, use a plate as an analogy. I had a plate, which was my life, and then I had, you know, a little bit of health and a little bit of relationships, a little bit of career, a little bit of money, a little bit of hopes, dreams, hobbies. And then I kind of sprinkled a little bit of spirituality on top. And what would happen was, you know, up until I was about 30, if one of those things was shaken up, so if there was a change in my career, change in a relationship, change in any of those areas, the plate got really wobbly. And the change became really quite difficult because the plate wasn't stable. And what I realized was what I really needed to do was have the plate be my spiritual beliefs, because those could never be threatened. And even though the plate might be empty, as it was, you know, for a little while when I left my corporate job and I broke off an engagement and I decided to travel and I didn't have any salary, my plate was pretty empty. And yet my life felt so solid because that plate was my spiritual beliefs. And those got stronger and stronger, and they certainly did, you know, climbing up Kilimanjaro. I climbed up Kilimanjaro by myself, actually, with a guide. And that was an experience in truly becoming my own best friend and facing all of my demons. Because when you are climbing up a mountain and it rained and hailed for 7 days straight, your mind feeds you a lot of stuff. And what's on the other side of that, you know, is more of a spiritual, peaceful, sort of calm place where you find gratitude, you're in awe of your own body, you start loving your legs and what your body's actually capable of doing and bringing you up a mountain. And yet, you know, I find my peace in my sort of small apartment here in the West Village in New York City, where I have a little spiritual corner, and it's where I wrote most of my book. And I surround it with things that uplift me, remind me who I truly am, what my essence is. I have candles, I have photographs of different spiritual teachers, both living and dead, who've sort of crossed my life. And that's the stability, that's the plate, that's what holds my life.
Oh, what happened for me is, and I don't know where I heard this the first time, but it really stuck, and that was, if going through a change, going through a challenge, and to zoom back out, to zoom out, and to of course become the observer, which, you know, always connects me with spirit, and then to ask a question that I've used over and over again, is what is the lesson that I'm learning here that I could learn in no other way except this one, with these people and this situation and this time and space? What is the lesson that I could learn in no other way? And that always gives me a much greater idea and a connection, as you say, connect, reconnect, and then reconnect again to that and come back to that, as you say.
I love the story, and I love the question, Alan. I think I'll use it. I truly believe that, you know, we're here on this beautiful planet, and I've been very lucky to see every continent and, you know, nearly 70 countries. And it is amazing how change, you know, it's the one thing that connects us all as human beings. We're all going through it wherever we are in the world. It's sort of the language of life. We can all expect it to happen. And I think we are all here to learn. We're here to laugh. We're here to live. And we're certainly here to, you know, just grow as human beings and to learn some lessons. And boy, do we resist some of those lessons. And they come back in every possible form.
Hillary Clinton, of course, wrote a book about it takes a whole village. And, of course, coming from that statement, it takes a whole village to raise a child, but it actually takes a whole village. It actually takes a whole world to live a life. And in that, you deal with that in principle number eight, your change support team.
The most worst flaw that we have as human beings is that we keep thinking we're alone. We keep thinking we are disconnected. We keep thinking that we're the only person going through this. No one has ever felt this way. And it truly is. It's a terrible, terrible memory loss that we have. And it's interesting how we come together as human beings very often when there is some sort of crisis around us or in the world, and that suddenly brings us back together. But it's so important to know that whatever change you want to make, however crazy, big, difficult it feels right now, or whatever change you might be facing, there is always, always, always someone who can help. And you might not even know that person today. Sometimes it just might be setting the intention for having the right person to show up to help you with that change or to help you with the next stage of your life. You will attract someone new into your life. Sometimes it's better to have a new person that doesn't lock you into your old identity, that doesn't know that you failed 12 times to lose weight or quit smoking before, and who in some ways is going to project all of that past identity onto you. So it's really important to kind of go, well, who's on my team? And these are not necessarily your team of friends. They're more, who's on my change support team? Who truly wants me to change? Who truly believes I can change? Who is going to check in with me, encourage me, and really want that change for me? And again, take a piece of paper, write down, who's on my change support team? If I'm making this change right now or if I'm going through it, who are people who maybe have some skill in the change, maybe have gone through the change, you know, in a previous capacity? Really looking at, well, are the friends and the team that I have, are they people who are going to get in the hole with me? You know, which is fine, and we need a few of those. Or are they friends that are going to, like, throw me the ladder and actually coach me up the ladder? And, you know, very often we have more of one than the other. But really remembering that there are people, I look at, you know, on our website, we have tens of thousands of people in all different life changes who are helping each other out and they've never met. And they are sharing things that they have not shared with anyone. And there's such a, you know, a beauty and a grace in feeling safe, even if it's anonymous and no one needs to share their name or photos or anything, but where you're letting another human being in to what is going on. It's such a gift to be able to help someone. I mean, we've all gone through the experience of going, oh, my gosh, I really was there for a friend who was going through this, or who called me from the emergency room. Like, give someone the gift of being able to help you. Somehow we don't want to let people have that, but give someone the gift of being able to help you. And be honest about what you need. You know, I don't like my job. I really need help figuring out. Will you sit down, ask me some questions? What do you need? Be specific with the help that you need. And then the other thing I would say on your change support team, sometimes it's not only people that support you, but your change support team is the environment that you live in. It's the place that you spend your time in. You know, what are things that could actually help you move through that change? Do you need to redecorate? Do you need to move? Do you need to get a new apartment? Do you need to just sort of freshen up the energy? Sometimes our environment keeps us very stuck. It reminds us of past things, past people, past changes that maybe might have been happening now. So just evaluate whether the environment that you live in and work in is actually encouraging and empowering you for change.
Yes, and you did allude to this earlier in that segment. And something that I've noticed is that we place people in our lives, on our team, that we really place there to protect us from our future. You know, they protect us from the change that's trying to happen. But we don't want change to happen that fast, because then we, of course, would be out of control. We'd be vulnerable and that kind of thing. So we've got to look closely at the people that we've put on our team, because some of them are being used to protect us from very positive things happening in our lives.
Yep. And very often when you start changing, it brings up a lot of stuff for people around you. And you become a mirror for what's possible. You become an example. You know, they feel disconnected from you when you start changing. When one person starts losing weight, when one person goes off and is in a beautiful, healthy relationship, it pushes a mirror up to people's own lives. And I think, you know, one of the things I tell people is, you know, every day you get to choose whether you want to be an example or a warning. You can be an inspiration on how to deal with something, how to deal with a tough change. Or you can be an example on how not to deal with it. And that is also a choice, and that is something that you can control. And we are all looking for people that we can and want to role model. We really secretly are. We're looking for that heroic part in them, because it ultimately reflects back in us and the part that we all have inside as well.
Number 9, and the final principle, get unstuck, which is all about action. Now, you learned about action, well, I'm sure for many people, but Tony Robbins is, of course, one of the best, one of the finest in terms of get moving, get into action, because action will get us unstuck, and it will help to allow that change to birth itself.
It will, and one of the interesting questions I'm often asked is, well, why don't you put action like right at the beginning? Because the first question we have when we're going through change is, tell me what to do. What do I do? What do I do? This has just happened. What do I do? And what I tell people, and there's a reason why it's the last principle, and out of the people I interviewed, it certainly was not the first thing that they would say was what most helped them with the change. Because emotions are what's hard going through a change. The actions are actually easy. The actions to quit smoking, very easy. The actions to lose weight, very easy. Actions to get divorced, very easy. Actions to quit your job, very easy. It's the emotions that actually get in the way, which is why there are 8 other principles that come before this one. But, you know, the most important action, without a doubt, and I alluded to it earlier, has to do with taking care of yourself. People who are good at change, they take care of their physical, emotional, spiritual bodies. As Tony Robbins certainly would say, it starts with the body that you live in. It starts with what I would say is the very foundational SEED as an acronym. You know, SEED standing for sleep, eating well, exercising, and drinking water, that is. But really looking at, well, where am I at? If I'm going through a change, for sure, no matter, at least one, if not two of those, have gone out the window. You're either not drinking enough water, or drinking something else. You're probably not getting enough sleep. You're not moving, or you're eating really badly. And your body is dying to help you with this change. It will constantly try and get back on your side. And we sabotage it, and it's usually the last place that we go to. So really checking in, if you are completely stuck right now, whatever the change is, I don't even know what it needs to be, the first place I would tell you to go is to look at your health and just to make a small step in the right direction and to celebrate that and acknowledge yourself. You had a bottle of water. You've definitely sort of helped yourself move through change. I would say, you know, a couple of other actions that were important for these change optimists, as I called them and interviewed them, was make a decision. Just make one small decision. There's a power that comes with making a decision where there's energy that gets moving again. If you're stuck, very often the time before a decision is so much harder than actually making and getting past the decision itself. So making a decision, getting that energy moving, think about, well, what is something that I know I can decide and is now ready? For some people, getting unstuck is about writing, getting a journal, getting a pad of paper, and just getting it out of our heads. We're so in our heads when we're going through change. We've got to get back in our bodies. We've got to get back in our creativity. Get it out on a piece of paper. Some people, it's about reading. And it's sort of, you know, I remember times of change where very specific books helped me through. And I think, you know, being led to the right book at the right time, sometimes that will help people. Focus on the little things. Little things that just remind you of the familiar, remind you of some level of structure in your life. What hasn't changed? What can I keep doing? What can I sort of focus on and get organized? Another way to get unstuck that I found that a lot of people said, you know, this was probably my saving grace, was to actually be there and help someone else. When you get out of your own stuff, change is all about me. Me, me, me. It's my change. It's my disaster. It's my crisis. It's my emotions. It's my broken heart. It's me, me, me. And kind of focusing on the fact that, you know, you still exist as part of a family, a job, a community, your neighbors. Find a way of being important for someone else so that you do matter and it's important for you to show up. And, you know, you have something that is important to do other than just focus on your change. And what you'll realize is while you're doing something else for someone else, you will actually naturally start moving through your change better. One of the things that I have both in my office and in my home are, you know, vision boards, or what I call in the book, walls of change. And they are very visual representations of changes that I'd like to make, I'd like to attract in my life. They are pictures from magazines. They are quotes. They are things that just genuinely make me feel good. So that when change is hitting, I actually physically have something to focus on to just sort of direct my path, direct my thoughts, direct my energy and my feelings. That is something I also talk about in the book. How do I create one of those? How do I make it so that I actually start attracting, magnetizing, and having some of these changes show up in my life?
Well, action is certainly contagious, that's for sure. Ariane, we're going to open up to questions here, although I've been getting instant messages throughout our conversation. There's something going on either on Facebook or on the net itself, and people have been having a real trouble logging onto the call, through Facebook. I don't know what's been going on. So we'll open it up to questions. I'm not expecting a lot of questions, but in the meantime, I'm going to star 2, folks, to raise your hand, and then we'll unmute you, and you can ask Ariane a question. In the meantime, Ariane, tell us about first30days.com.
So the website is 60 different specific life changes, all the ones that you would expect, from losing a loved one, pregnancy, getting married, getting divorced, starting a business, losing weight, losing a job, all the way to more spiritual ones, first 30 days of meditating, first 30 days of living spiritually, first 30 days of pursuing a dream, first 30 days of going green. Really, it has sort of a breadth of any life change that you're either facing or you've always dreamed of making. What we've done on the web is we have gone out and found the top experts. We've interviewed them. We've asked them specific questions. We asked them the mistakes to avoid. We asked them what was most important to know while people get going with this change. We have 30 days of email tips where we handhold people through the first 30 days, making sure that they not only get started, but they actually stay started. We have a community of people going through the same changes as you, where you can ask questions, you can look at all the questions and answers that have been shared since we've started. Sort of this community of life wisdom where you're not alone and other people have been going through. And we have the top resources, the top books, the top websites that might be interesting. So it's really the principle of the site is to create a very optimistic, hopeful, positive, inspiring, informational place where change really is possible. We've got a little over 1 million people now on the site, and it's what I call a real community of change optimists. I'm very committed to starting this change movement where little changes do certainly make a very big difference as we get going.
Well, and yes, I created the profile today. I've been on the site a few times before, but I created a profile today, and just all of the different categories of what am I looking for, what are the things that I'm going through. You know, one of the things, Ariane, of course, is that we probably need to do this. It'd be great to spend some time on first30days.com prior to any kind of major change or crises that comes at us. We need to kind of put these resources in place and educate ourselves before we actually need them, so that we have the presence of mind that when we really do need them, we'll, you know, we can go back and say, okay, well, I know, you know, and do some research on the site at that time.
Sure. And the other thing I would really invite people to do is, you know, we all have a friend or a loved one or a family member that's either going through a change or would love to make a change. And just letting them know that that's also a place where they can get help and they can feel supported. It's a very loving thing to do for someone.
We've had a couple of email questions here. Let me just, are there gender differences in the way that people handle change?
It's a great question. We actually did some research with a few thousand people. We created what we call the change report all across America. And we looked at gender differences, financial differences, age differences, whether people on the West Coast are better than change on the East Coast. That change report is actually available for free off our website. You can go download it. It's literally under the change report. Men and women go through change differently. It was not a matter of who was better than the other. Men tend to move through change much quicker. They tend to take action much quicker. But then they also tend to not feel the feelings, not express them, not reach out to people. And that can sort of create, you know, a different level of how they then move through the next change. Women were much better at reaching out, much better at talking about change. Men are better at initiating change. Women were better at handling change very often. That was the more interesting fact to that question.
Another question here. What's the difference between managing change and managing stress?
Very good question. Change does not always involve stress. A lot of the times, the change, when it does happen, will bring up some level of emotion. What we've done sort of, especially in this country, we just assume that any emotion is stress because it's not okay for us to be feeling emotions. So I would really make a distinction with, well, what are the emotions that you're actually feeling, and not to sort of equate them automatically with the feeling of stress. Some stress is very good. Some stress, you know, we look at our lovely Olympic athletes out there in Beijing. They are magnificent at managing stress. And that stress sort of works for them sometimes. So really not to sort of get those two things confused and just to sort of look honestly as to which one's going on, which one is sort of empowering for me.
Yes, you're absolutely right. We've collapsed these two words into the same word, and they are not the same word. Although you could say that, I suppose that, I mean, you know, getting up out of bed is stressful, you know, because it puts stress on the body. But I just interviewed Dean Karnazes. He has run all of these marathons, and he's just written a book called 50-50, where Yeah, I think Men's Health magazine calls him the most fit man alive, and I have no doubt that he is. He just ran 50 marathons in 50 states in 50 days. Some days he would run a 26-mile marathon, get on a plane, and fly half the night and get off the plane and run another 26-mile marathon in order to be able to do that. And he said in the interview that they were doing a study of his blood because they wanted to see what would be the result on the stress on his body of doing such an incredible task. And no one has certainly ever done it. Like, he's ran across Death Valley, he's ran across the Sahara Desert, but he certainly had never done 50 marathons in 50 days before. And interestingly enough, his immune system and the systems in his body were stronger at the end of the 50 days than they were at the beginning. So getting right back again to that change muscle that you're talking about, we have incredible resources if we just learn how to employ them.
Yep. I think one of the worst things we do is we underestimate ourselves. We underestimate other people, and we certainly underestimate life.
Ariane, it's an hour and a half, and I know that it is late in New York City, and I do not want to keep you over time. So I'm going to drop these questions that had come in. I want to just thank you so much and encourage everyone to. We're going to be mailing out to about 200,000 people, and of course this is going to be available on a replay, and I want to encourage everyone to head over to first30days.com and develop a profile. Take the changes in your life seriously and take them and learn how to do them in an elegant way. Any parting words for our listeners?
Alan, what I would love to invite people to do is for the people who do have questions who we didn't get to, is certainly to come to the site and contact me through the site. I blog on the site. There's an area where you can ask me questions. I believe the email address is contactariane@first30days.com. And I'd be more than happy to make sure people are supported and get the answers that they need.
Well, you've got a great staff, too. I've been working with the staff over the last few days and making this call happen, and they're everyone is, one of the key things, of course, is flexibility and just being able to kind of roll with the punches, and certainly your team is able to do that. Thank you so much for joining us on the call, my dear. This has, again, been a wonderful time with you, and I look forward to meeting you again as the site evolves and of course, the next book from Ariane.
Thank you, Alan. It was such a pleasure, and really remember to change positively.
And thank you to all of you for joining us. Remember that we have calls now up on the site with William Shatner and Peter Senge, and Gabor Maté, and incredible content coming up with Alan Alda, and the next one on September the 4th with Ken Blanchard, all about the one-minute entrepreneur and developing that entrepreneur in your life. Thank you so much to all of you for joining us, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Bye for now.